Welcome to Faithfully Working, a podcast where we think, read, and ask questions about how faith in Jesus impacts our everyday work. I'm your host, Addison Hawkins. Hey friends, I want to invite you to a special event we are hosting at Christ Church on September 11th. We have invited author, professor, and pastor Daniel Doriani to come and talk about faith and work. Dr. Doriani has a lot to say about the biblical principles that surround the faith and work conversation. We would love to see you there. In fact, you can sign up. It's really simple. It'll take you less than 1 minute. Trust me, I know because I just did it. And if you're like, I can't sign up right now, that's okay. Maybe you're driving, maybe you're changing a diaper or making food. That's okay. Call your spouse, your significant other, your best friend, or your pastor and ask them to sign you up. I don't think you'll regret it. You can find more information in the show notes. The headlines say it all. Employees are quitting instead of giving up work from home, Bloomberg article. How to leave a job after only 3 to 6 months, U.S. News. Is the quest for meaningful work a scam? Christianity Today. And what to think about before quitting your job in the Great Resignation? CNBC. That's just a couple of headlines that have come out in the past week and a half or so, and we're seeing more every few days. See, these times are new for the vast majority of people who are in the workforce. The pandemic has changed how we engage, think, and live out our working lives. See, folks are leaving their jobs in droves, which means something is striking at the core of who we are as humans when it comes to work. See, on this episode, we're going to listen in on our most recent Faithfully Working lunch. We titled this one, Work 2.0. And our hope is that we can engage with one another in the difficulties and strivings of our work, but also the singing the praises together. You see, COVID has changed how we work. And today, we're going to see and experience the consequences of that change. We invited three guests, one detective, one social worker, and one executive for a local business, and we had them discuss what has changed at their workplace, but also what are the changes that they themselves as workers have experienced. We joined Dan Churchwell as the moderator of this conversation. Hope you enjoy.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks everybody for joining us. A lot of familiar faces and some I haven't met personally. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to come and talk to you about faith work in context with Christ Church. I appreciate Addison and Andrew and many of the others on the team, Serena helping to guide the conversations. And today we're going to primarily talk about, for 15 minutes, I'm going to try to set the stage a little bit about what I called it, you know, faithfully working, the promises and perils of hybrid work. But we're just going to talk a little bit essentially about the last 18 months. We've had a really strange 18 months for the majority of us in our lifetimes. It isn't unprecedented. I hate that word, unprecedented, but because there are precedents in history of contagions and et cetera. But for our lifetimes, at least for the vast majority of us, this is something very new. And so I kind of want to set the stage or put some parameters, some guardrails about what we're going to talk about. But honestly, what drives me personally is it's really easy. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world. Yesterday, I had I had a very bad day. The 13 Marines blown up in Afghanistan and the whole turmoil around that. And then you add, you know, work pressures and other things. I was just down yesterday about the cares of this world. And so it is, a lot of us are armchair quarterbacks. We have a lot of things to think about and opinions. And in our modern world, we share those on Twitter and Facebook and IG and everywhere. But I think the value of this program, primarily for us, the people of Christ Church, I think I can speak for the committee as well, is that it's bringing the conversation to a group of people that minister, work, and worship together, and that we can have ongoing conversations. This isn't like us lecturing you, and we scatter. It's now we have 12 to 18 months of this grant to explore this through books, through special speakers, through lunches like this, through interviews. And that really is the mark of the gospel primarily is bringing the local church, these topics to the local church. And how do we serve one another and encourage one another that we see every Sunday or Wednesday or when we get together. So this is what really animates me and motivates me, no matter my opinions, broadly speaking. So today we have a great interview. I mean, the main story is the interview with three of our people from Christ Church to talk about how it has affected their work in different ways. But let's talk a little bit. I mean, if you think about it, we're ending our 18th month of the COVID experience. And there are a lot of different cracks in society, and I'm going to emphasize this later on, but I think systems questions seem to be at the foundation of all of these issues. Systems, what are the systems that make a good society, and where is it fracturing because of some of the things that COVID has highlighted? And a lot of these systems problems were there pre-COVID, but we just had 18 months of just highly spotlighted problems and conundrums. And so I would argue that there's, to not be too hyperbolic, there's a somewhat of a midlife crisis. And I don't know if it's midlife or post-life or so somewhere in there, but for America. I think we're at a point, the West, but America in particular, because I can't speak to other countries, that's not my specialty. Yeah, we're in a moment. How about that? There's a certain kind of moment, and I don't think anyone can really describe it accurately. We have experts on one side of an issue, on both sides of issues. We have pastors weighing in theologically. We have, like we already talked about, armchair quarterbacks. There is just an underlying anxiety to what is happening culturally, politically, societally, and medically. And if you talk, think about all the disruption that has happened over the last 18 months. I know these types of workers personally in these fields: flight attendants, teachers, restaurant workers, manufacturers, people who work in the public service sector, and then white collar work. I mean, I know people in a lot of different sectors and have polled and talked to them over the last few months. I was just on the phone this last weekend with a very, very good friend of mine who is in Chicago, major manufacturing, and they literally, he's right now, they're saying China is the major thoroughfare for most of America's manufacturing, and they just can't get supplies out of China. Their supply chain issues with rubber, they work a lot with rubber and with certain kinds of metals and certain kind of fabrication of metals, and they just simply can't get it out of China. The capacity is not there. And then when they get it out and get it into ports, the idea of getting it off the ship onto a container or a truck, they can't get the supply chain to move even if it ships. And so he is just tearing his hair out because his business is growing and they could double their revenue right now if they had the supply chain. And so you talk to flight attendants. Flight attendants, they are calling in sick in unprecedented numbers. They're being accosted. How many of you have seen a video of somebody being duct taped to their chair? Have you seen these? These unruly passengers, it's up, I don't know what, 800% or something like that. I'm flying in a couple weeks. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be duct taped to my chair. So when we talk about, you know, you could go through, and so part of what we're doing today in the interview process is talking to people that we're around. You know, you can here are just some of the headlines that are broadly covering these topics. The Death of the Job by Vox. The Great Resignation is here and it's real in Inc. magazine. The Real Reasons Why Companies Don't Want You to Work Remotely, Forbes magazine. Do chance meetings at the office boost innovation? There's no evidence. The New York Times. The pandemic showed us how to have better meetings. Also, the New York Times. Just this morning, I woke up to a ding in my podcast. I got too many in there. You know, it sounds like a phone call. But there was a new podcast from Christianity Today, and the title of it was, "Is the Quest for Meaningful Work a scam. And so there's a lot of people, secular, religious, all over the board, trying to talk about what is work, what is work 2.0, what is work post-COVID, what has happened. Nobody really knows. So we can hyper-spiritualize certain concepts about work that largely lead to unhelpful thinking patterns. And I want to avoid those. And so when we're thinking through some of these topics of work, does anybody know the average hours of work for the modern world? How many thousands of hours you'll work in your lifetime generally? There's kind of a sociological number on it. Anybody? Yeah, in the average working lifetime, it's 90,000 hours. 90,000 hours. So no matter how you come at this, work takes up the predominance of our life. What is it for? How does it serve us spiritually? How could it possibly harm us? It can form us and deform us. There's a lot of talking about formation in Christian discipleship and Christian language, but we don't talk a lot about the deforming possibilities of certain kinds of things that we do daily. And so it's getting at some of these tensions, some of these systems questions. For example, the systems question of what is employment? Right now, I listed off some of these titles earlier, the death of the job or the great resignation. Right now, there are more people polled looking for other jobs than in the last 40 years. People are really fluid right now, like they want to leave. And of course, there's a lot of different reasons why, and people are trying to discern why. But right now, managers, leaders, they can't conceive, they can't bear the idea of loyalty as the driving factor of keeping people at work anymore. It's just gone. Secondly, so you have employment issues, these systems. What are some of these systems? Employment. Number two, social institutions. The average respect or belief in institutions, that institutions will help protect us, provide for us. These topics are failing as well. I mean, currently now there are more working age males, which is mid-20s to late 50s, there are more working age males voluntarily sitting out of the workforce than ever before. Voluntarily. Not disabled, not, you know, countering for all of those things. There are more working age males than in the history of statistical analysis in America. There are more working age males just saying, I'm done. I'm out. Women in the workforce. Right now, over 50% of households, a woman is the primary breadwinner. Depending on what you read, it's 40 to 60%, depending on how they do the study. So women are working more. They upwards of 60% of college enrollees are women. And yet COVID handed them, some would argue, largely a gut punch when it comes to what they had to do with figuring out schooling, their work-life balance during COVID, and many of them are starting to try to reimagine what it means to be a woman in the workplace, balancing all sorts of kinds of things. And it seems to hit women disproportionately. So there's a plethora of diverse challenges for men, for women in the workplace. So you have these social institutions. What does church play in the broader social spectrum? There are several studies recently out that the average person coming to church 2.2 times a month is your person that is highly engaged in your work at a church. It's 2.2 times per month. There are more and more nuns meaning not the woman in the habit walking around, or like my son said when he was really young and we were walking in Costco and he saw three nuns in bright blue habits and he goes, Mom, Dad, look, Jesus! And I don't know where he got that conception. We've been Protestant our whole lives, and he yelled it down the aisle at Costco. So nuns, not in that aspect, but nuns being people who don't identify with any religious tradition and don't participate in church are consistently on the rise. And so you have these social institutions. So you have the family, you have church, you have civic institutions, whether it's your little league team or your, think of all the civic institutions that used to be a lot of the glue or the bedrock of any community, those are fracturing as well. And then enough said about political engagement, the binary nature of what it means to be in the political realm or political conversations these days is almost a non-starter. You can just, might as well just have a fist fight and get over with it, you know. It's just hard to have any kind of real political discourse. As my wife likes to say when people ask her about certain topics, do you have 3 hours? Because we want the Twitter conference, you know, we want to own the libs. Or we want to, you know, what? Pick your phrase. We want to get in the grenade and blow up the conversation and look smart. But really, true discipleship is getting in and having long conversations about hard topics. And a lot of us don't have the capacity, the time, or the will to do such a thing. And so political engagement is off the charts. So you have these systems questions, this fracturing of institutions, these, and again, I didn't even broach the whole COVID medical conversation, mask, don't mask, vax, don't vax. That's a whole nother thing as well that affects all of us. And so as we're thinking through, what are the promise and perils of hybrid work? How has some of your work changed? I look out there and I see some of your vocations, and for some of you, it's completely upended it. For some of us, white-collar workers, I sat at my desk at my office or flew around a lot. Well, I stopped flying, but I just sat at my desk at my home. My master bedroom is now kind of like, you know, co-working space. Best kind of WeWork I can imagine, right? You know, co-working at home. But there are other people who lost their job, lost their livelihood for months, existed on certain kind of government programs. Are there attitudes around that? I mean, there's so much spiritual, theological, justice-oriented conversations that we could have around vocation and faithfully working. And so the promises and perils of hybrid work is really where we want to concentrate our talk today, our thoughts. I have a few questions for the panel. I'm going to ask, in fact, could the panel come up right now and have a seat? I think the couches here are where the panel is going to be. And I'm going to ask just a few guiding questions, but I would love for you, this is, like I said, a community opportunity to think through, to add commentary, to engage with us about these topics. And so I'm going to ask each of them to briefly introduce themselves and tell us what they do, how long they've been associated with Christ Church. And then I will set the stage with 3 questions, but I would love for questions from the audience to engage this conversation for the next 35, 40 minutes. So, and I'll ask your question so it can be heard. We're recording this, and so you can ask your question from where you're seated, and then I'll just repeat it for the podcast. David, let's start with you. Introduce yourself, please.
Good. Okay. David Hobson. Been at Christ Church with my family, my wife Sarah. We've got 3 kids. We've been here for about 3 years. Currently, I work as a detective at Wyoming Police Department, City of Wyoming. Before that, worked overseas for about 10 years in the Balkans, in Albania and Macedonia, then moved to West Michigan about 5 years ago.
All right, thank you.
Hello, I'm Cassandra Wolf. My husband, David, and I have been attending Christ Church for the last 6 years. I'm a social worker. I currently work for the state of Michigan as a vocational rehabilitation counselor. And so I assist people with all sorts of disabilities to either maintain their current employment or to find future employment and to kind of help them find equitable outcomes for that. So thrilled to be here today. Thanks.
Is this okay with the mask?
Yeah.
We're good? Okay. Hi, I'm Caroline Kelly. My husband, Matt, over there, and I and our 3 kids have been at Christ Church for 16 plus
it's
years.
Sound on.
And I work for Steelcase, and I'll just say I'm here as myself, not as an official representative of Steelcase. And I work in our research organization, and we study the work and the future of work and how we can help with our customers create better work environments for people. But it really, as Dan said, it's about systems. So we're not just thinking about chairs and desks. We're thinking about how work happens. And I think we're kind of, as Dan said, I'll disagree. I do think it's an unprecedented time, not from an epidemiological perspective, but from the state of the world we're in with technology, with how work happens and the impact and the global nature of it. So we're working on these kind of problems with our customers and thinking a lot about it. And I'm excited about the conversation today.
Great. Well, since you have the mic, let's start the question. You know, we'll start the question with you.
Sure.
And I love disagreement. So yeah, let's have at it. And the systems impact though question is a fascinating one.
Yeah.
So, but the first question I ask them to prepare for and think about is, how has your organization or your job, you don't have to speak for your organization in toto, mm-hmm. but how has your job been impacted both positively mm-hmm. and negatively by COVID over the last 18 months?
All right. Well, as you can, and for, I don't know if everyone is familiar with Steelcase, but we are a 100-plus-year-old furniture manufacturer, and our customers are large corporations, and we outfit offices. So as you can imagine, when no one went to the office, our business kind of screeched to a halt, and a lot of big customers decided to put projects on hold. We had just come off our best year in 20 years. I mean, it was fantastic, and all of a sudden, you know, besides like the shutdown of manufacturing, we were, everything was grinding to a halt. And at the same time, the positive was everyone was like, help us figure out what is happening. So, you know, as a researcher, and I've been there for 16 plus years, and I spent a dozen researching healthcare environments, and now have responsibility for our user experience research and our market insights research. Like, usually we could do a project, it would take months and months, and it would be pretty evergreen for a while. Never have I seen research needing to be like churned over, you know, so quickly. Like, oh, that's 2 months old. That doesn't count anymore. What's happening now? So I think what's exciting for us is that it is a great reckoning. People are saying, okay, we can't do things the same way. We need to figure out what's changing in all these systems. And I think for the first time, and especially as Christians, the voice of the employee has never had more power, right? So people are looking at themselves and saying, like, what matters to me? How do I want to work? How do I want to live? What does this look like in this hybrid future? And we're talking about white collar employees. Mm-hmm. I know it is not a rosy picture for many people who don't have the advantage of being able to work from home. But I think we're going to see forces, things like discussions about mental health and well-being and what is the care, duty of care, right, for organizations, for their employees, it's being accelerated and put in the forefront. And for me, when we start to think about as Christians, but also as someone who practices user-centered design and human-centered, like really, how do we think about what people need within a broader spectrum of making organizations successful in their business?
So, Caroline, for you, what exactly was there? Can you point a finger at, or uh-huh. what were one or two ways that your specific job was impacted?
Oh,
like
my
how,
specific
like
job.
March or April,
yeah.
what did that look like for you 18 months ago? How
sure.
how did it change?
Well, specifically, I actually, as I had prior to COVID, been realizing that the role of work was becoming deforming for me. I had cut my hours back to 80% and renegotiated what my job looked like. And then COVID hit, and it was like, oh my gosh, all hands on deck. So the kids came home. My husband's business virtually shut down because he's a small business owner, and it, you know, still hasn't recovered. So we're negotiating what's going on with him, having the children at home, me ramping back up my work to figure things out. And then everyone got put on 80% salary, and then all of a sudden we were on 50% work because we participated in the job share work program with the state. So literally, if we worked more than our number of hours, we could create a huge problem for the organization. So it was like very roller coastery. We're trying to be very agile. We're also trying to take care of our people who are all at home, and I'm responsible for people. So finding new ways to engage and check on people's health and well-being. And so I would say it was very much in flux. Yeah. And yet the demand to turn around our work product was very high. So controlled chaos, I would say, is how I would characterize it.
All right, good, thank you.
Yeah.
Cassandra, how has your organization or job been impacted both positively and negatively by the last 18 months?
So I am a state employee, so I'm responsible and beholden to state legislator, state policies, but I'm also very much beholden to federal policies and federal legislation. And often, as much as they say those two organizations should work well together and inform one another as how we do our work, it doesn't necessarily work that way. So, you know, COVID happened. We all knew we were in this pandemic. It's all anyone ever talked about. And yet, for my role specifically as a rehabilitation counselor, based on rehabilitation legislation that has been updated since the 1970s, we, as rehabilitation counselors at the state level, still had our numbers to make at the end of the fiscal year from a federal mandate. And the feds didn't care that we were in a pandemic. They didn't care that there weren't jobs to be had. They didn't care that people didn't want to look for those jobs, and particularly that my clients, who are by and large ill, chronically disabled, immunocompromised, had all the more fear of not wanting to work. And so it was very much living in these two worlds where federal mandates and therefore my state recognition and how I was getting, you know, scored for my job as an effective counselor had not changed. And yet the environment itself had drastically changed. So I'm ending this fiscal year, our whole office is, with horrendous numbers. And while we have to acknowledge it and we talk about it, there still has to be the top-down language of what are you doing to get people into jobs? Why aren't we getting referrals? We are constantly being hounded by the feds to get this happening. So I very much had to live in this duplicitous space. And that was very frustrating for me. I understand systems, you know, that was my focus as a social worker, was systems social work. But at the end of the day, I felt that those systems were absolutely failing me as a clinician and failing my clients to be the best they could be. So that was the negative. The positive for me personally was I work with people with disabilities, but I also have a myriad of my own disabilities and chronic health conditions. So I've been able to work full-time my whole working career, but I've noticed in the last 5 or 6 years that things are much more challenging for me physically. I fatigue really easily, have to call in sick. It's been a struggle. So the blessing of working from home was literally I could work from home in my pajamas and not turn on my camera and maybe not shower that day because I wasn't feeling well at all, and I could still feel effective and not have to present or show up or use public transportation to get to my office, which for me can take 4 hours a day to use public transportation. So I got so much of my time back, and I felt like I was even able to be more effective personally and professionally, even while we were all in this really chaotic situation.
Thank you, Cassandra. Let me just ask a follow-up question real quick. So in regarding the first part of your conversation, you asked about or alluded to the tyranny of systems, right? The tyranny of metrics. So is there just going to be a giant asterisk for you as your company does reporting or your division, or how are they discerning how to work through that metric problem?
I think thankfully I have really good district level management who will take the time to say, we know what you're dealing with, but we have to say these things. So I haven't seen my performance negatively like audited at the office level. But we have our big federal audit coming up in 6 months, and I still don't think that there have been conversations with us as regional line-level staff about how that's going to work.
Fascinating.
So,
thank you. All right, David, how has your organization or job been impacted positively and negatively over the last 18 months?
For whatever reason, they would not let us work remotely. we fought pretty hard for that, and they said no. On a day-to-day level, nothing really changed. We went into work, especially, I remember the early days of lockdown when, like, we really didn't have much information about COVID, and, I mean, there's just a lot of unknowns. I mean, it was a very strange time. I still remember the first couple of weeks of lockdown. It was just eerie. I mean, there's hardly anyone out. And those who were out, you're like, what are they doing? Where are they going? You know, and then
Was it a quiet period?
I mean, it was very brief.
Okay.
Very, very brief quiet period. It was almost this calm before the it was a calm before the storm, but it was an eerie sort of like the lake gets quiet and then all of a sudden, you know, all hell breaks loose. And so, yeah, I mean, I think for us, we did, you know, over the course of these last 18 months have seen societal dysfunction, you know, at maybe an even different level, mm-hmm. different aspects of it. When school shut down, I remember one of the repeated things that we were encountering was, you know, the schools would call into the police departments asking us to locate one of their students that hadn't been logged in for like 2-3 weeks. Or they had indication or they had reason to suspect potential child abuse. And so then we'd go try to track these kids down. I would say half of the time we couldn't even find the kid. They weren't connected to the address that they were registered at. The parents, you know, complete dysfunction, you know, in the home. They're living, you know, and then you like, well, wait, is this kid still alive? Are they still in the state? Where are they? And so that sort of thing was quite frequent in the early days of school lockdowns. And then just as time has gone on, I mean, we've seen massive increase in violence. I think the latest numbers for our department are about a 300% increase in violent crime. Record number of homicides in the area. I mean, it's some of that. And then substance abuse issues that have, I think, increased over these last 18 months. So we've seen all of that, for sure.
When you say violence, does that encompass the whole? I mean, am I right to say, I think I read that the greater Grand Rapids area, that the homicide rate was the highest?
Oh, yeah,
was that right?
In history.
Yeah. And then, so when you say violence, though, is that domestic violence because everybody's at home? I mean, do you have is that violence on the streets? Obviously, we've had, you know, social turmoil. Is there a way to discern that number?
Yes. Violence.
just across the board, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, domestic violence for sure. I mean, through the roof, particularly during lockdowns. Well, and then you see we're seeing people with these, you know, odd, maybe they would rent out a room to someone or they had some agreement, but they couldn't get rid of them. And then, you know, I mean, just, you know, but we want this person out. I'm sorry, you can't get them out, literally. Yeah, but they're doing this, and this. And, you know, so, yeah, we saw a lot of that. And then just street violence, shootings, stabbings, you know, all of the things you read about in the news. So.
What about positive? Was there anything for you positively that came out of the last 18 months or any change? So when you said there was no change, I mean, there was no change in what you, honestly?
Well, there was quite a bit of change, policy change, actually listening to Cassandra just talking about the interface with the government and metrics and trying to navigate all of that. We had our own elements of navigating pretty up and down and, just in terms of how the system was going to work during lockdown, our people that would normally be taken to jail are not, and then an increase in opportunism, and then navigating that, it was just changing so rapidly. And so that word got out on the street very quickly, and so we were seeing a huge increase in just brazen opportunism. You're like, what?
Like, no, expand what? That. Can you give just people that might not understand what exactly when you're, do you mean people, you just didn't have room in the jails?
What
do you
mean by just wasn't taking people.
Just wasn't taking, okay.
Yeah. So that, I mean, for stuff that you would just be, your mind would be blown. You're like, what? That's like where someone goes when they, you know, steal a car, you know, run in, you know, crash into someone, run from police and have a car full of stolen merchandise and you're just going to let them go? Yep.
Fascinating. Well, since you have the mic, let's move to the second question then. I mean, based on that topic, I mean, how have these changes affected your own outlook? I mean, the next two series of questions are a little more personal. How has it affected your outlook on your own work, whether we call it work-life balance or what have you? I mean, what were some of the challenges that you faced personally because of your work, but in and out of work?
Well, there. I mean, definitely.
Did you work more hours?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know those kinds of things?
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely worked more hours, and particularly since moving to the Detective Bureau this year. I mean, I think the last week and a half, I've gotten 4 late-night call-ins after hours, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Oh, got to go into work, get home at 4 in the morning, you know, get a couple hours of sleep, then go back to work, you know, and then it's... So, yeah, we've definitely had an increase in that. There is morale issues, you know, are we really accomplishing anything? Is this, I think there's definitely been frustrations. It has been interesting. I will say it has been interesting to work in this field that's received, for better or worse, quite a bright spotlight in the kind of national conversation recently, and to actually work in it and experience it firsthand and see it from the inside. It's been interesting, along with frustrating. So, you certainly get to experience and see things that your normal person would never see in their life, or most likely never see in their life. And seeing these types of things, weekly, daily, monthly. It's interesting.
So you've seen some of these system impacts.
For sure.
Cassandra, how have these changes affected your outlook? You shared a little bit previously, some of the positives, but what has your work-life balance been like, or your outlook on your work in particular to you? What have some of those effects been?
I think when I started off my career as a social worker and specifically chose to be a systems level social worker, I had this naivete that systems could work well if people had every intention to work them well. And now as the clinician who has a caseload of 80 plus people that I have to interact with daily and engage with these systems in this job and with COVID, I have seen kind of the utter brokenness of systems, which I know that from a Christian perspective, I get that, but I think it's like this aha realization over and over again of this is what I've been kind of having slowly revealed to me over the years, and I'm really seeing COVID highlight that. I've struggled. There have been definite times when I hated the idea of even being in my living room, because that was the best place for me to set up my office. Mm-hmm. And so even stepping into that space, I couldn't relax there anymore. And there are numerous times that I would just step away from a Teams meeting or an intake with a person, and they're bearing their deepest traumas to you through a computer screen, and to feel like, am I really making any difference? And I would just have to go and sob. And I think my emotional connection to my work and my emotional frustration at systems and at technology and at expectations, and how much of a difference can I really make if I only have 80 hours in a pay period and I have 90 some clients, how much direct impact can I make for them when they're looking for employment? That's my whole job, is to prepare people who have severe disadvantages to be employable, and we're in a huge crisis of employment. And so there was a lot of that I sifted through and worked through. I have a really good therapist now. It's been a challenge, but it's also been, God has been so faithful. I mean, as much, there's been a lot that's been shaken up in my personal life in the last 12 months in so many ways. And I really do think that those changes, the way that God has kind of brought forth grace and healing in that way, could not have happened if it weren't for the pandemic. Just when I look at circumstances. So I still am really thankful for God's sovereignty even in that while I was trying to manage work and life balance in a year that was, for my family, a treacherously hard year.
Sure. Good. Thank you for...
Thanks for sharing that. You know, to build on what Cassandra's saying a little bit, it's, I'm sure we can all look in our social and work spheres and see the emotional and mental and, you know, health struggles that people are having. Burnout is at an all-time high. I think, you know, for me personally, I realize how much of my work is like emotional labor often with my colleagues. And, you know, having that through the screen, as you said, you know, there's it's a lot more work to understand how people are doing when you aren't able to see their body language and, you know, check off their energy when they think no one's looking. Because when you're on the screen, you know, you can be on for that hour and then go back and, you know, curl up in a ball on your bed and your colleagues won't know. You know, and I had my moments where, you know, things were hard and, you know, trying to navigate through, you know, what that looks like to care for myself, to care. I think there's a lot of work, the term self-care, don't get me wrong, self-care is good, but it's taking care of each other, right? Mm-hmm. That I think is what is going to, again, back to the system, like those are the, that's where we need to put our focus. And especially as employers or people, you know, who are part of an organization, to see what is, you know, how do we prioritize what we're doing to really take the human into consideration as part of that, not just the numbers, right, that you have to report on. But to, you know, personally, I think, you know, I mentioned I had tried to take my hours back to 80%, and it was so I could be at home after school. We have a 9, an 11, and a almost 15-year-old. And pre-COVID, the only way to do that really was to say, okay, I will stop working and I will go home. But now the positive has been like, I can be there and I can pop down for the 15 minutes after school and be like, hey, how's your day? Have that check-in, or, you know, at lunchtime during the summer, and still be able to, you know, do 100% or whatever the number really is, and to have that flexibility. And you mentioned women, you know, are adversely impacted. The numbers of job loss, you know, it's disproportionately higher for women, especially for women of color. I think that's, there's a lot of, you know, dynamics that as we kind of work this out to help people come out of the collective trauma that we've had, the burnout, the stress at work, to help people reprioritize and be supportive. And for organizations, you know, we're going to have to change to do that. So for me, it's helped me recalibrate and decide, you know, where am I going to put my energy? So I think that's been a positive. I don't have it figured out perfectly. I don't have it perfect. Actually, my 9-year-old Theo yesterday, he said, you know, I told him I had to like do some work, and he was like, "This is you working, Mom." That's like me at my computer, right? And I'm like, "Is that really?" He's like, "Yeah, that's what you're like." I was like, "Okay."
Yeah.
You know, so when you realize that's how your child sees you, I'm like, "Well, how else am I?" And, you know, he thought he was being funny, so we didn't get to explore that further in the moment. But I do think that toggling back and forth, while there's benefits, there's also challenges when you have to tell your kid, "Okay, I got to stop, you know, playing now because I have to go take a call." So it's a dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to describe to a child, what do you do? Like when you're sitting in front of a computer, you know, they're trying to figure it out. And it's, those are some compelling existential questions.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, has come out, and what I tried to allude to earlier, there's a term, it comes from Catholic social teaching, but the concept of subsidiarity, of those who are closest to a problem are best able to understand or fix or engage with the problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the local church, starting with the local church, listening to one another's stories, because they're vastly different. And yours, if we were to go around the room, we could probably have 3 or 4 hours here to listen to how COVID has upended, impacted positively, negatively, what's going on in your own lives. But just the realization and thinking through, we have people right here that we're rubbing shoulders with every Sunday. and in other manifestations of our small groups and Bible studies, that we need to be in tune. There is a lot of psychosomatic issues going on. And if we thought the fakeness of, "Oh, Dan, how you doing? Great, thanks for asking." If we thought that was fake before COVID, we know darn sure that we're all lying to each other post-COVID and or internal to COVID. There are a lot of, I mean, you have a conversation with anybody beyond 5 minutes, and you will quickly see that there are certain kinds of hurts, certain kinds of changes, certain kinds of depth that we're struggling with. And so I just want to encourage those of us to be sensitive to these topics while we're engaging them on a Sunday afternoon in between services.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to check out the show notes for links to other resources, including our website. It's there that you can find our Faithfully Working Hub, which outlines our vision, mission, and values, as well as upcoming events and ways to stay connected. Please consider rating and reviewing this podcast. It really helps us out. Our current plan is to release bi-monthly podcast episodes revolving around current issues of faith and work. I want to say a quick thank you to our Faithfully Working team that helped pull off this lunch. I also want to say thank you to Caroline, Cassandra, and David for walking alongside us in this conversation. The theme music that you hear is made by Harrison Amer.
I'm Addison Hawkins.
We're Faithfully Working, and we'll see you in a few weeks.